Good morning, and welcome to Meet the Author. Denny Griffin here, and I'll be your host for the next half hour. And if anyone would like to call in with a question or comment for me or my guest, you can reach us at 646-478-0982. 646-478-0982. Or if you're in my chat room and have a question, you can text it to me, and we'll get it answered for you. This morning I have joining me on the phone Stephen Grogan. Steve is the quintessential Renaissance man, a wanderer of life, a collector of experiences. He's been a president of a corporation, banker, elected public official, magazine editor, playwright, artist, builder, nightclub manager, and an overseer of ranches and farms. For the last 10 years, he's been active in the casino gaming industry, understanding that what people crave is entertainment with value. And Steve lives in Las Vegas. And his book is Vegas Die. And the plot behind that is someone is killing off the old mobsters of Las Vegas, and the mayor is the number one suspect. Steve, welcome to Meet the Author.
Thank you, Denny. I'm glad to be here today.
I gave just a little brief explanation of the plot for your book. Would you care to expand on that?
Well, the book actually has two different levels for the reader, and this is what makes it a fun read. Number one is the mystery itself, which is, again, someone's killing off the old mobsters of Las Vegas, and you have several different characters who have to try and figure out how they're doing it just to save the mayor's attention, you know, the mayor's political career. And then the other one is basically a kind of a gimmick that I came up with, which I think was designed to track people into the book a little more deeply. You read it as a mystery or you read it as a treasure hunt. And what I've done is I've hidden somewhere in Metro Las Vegas, I've hidden a dagger worth $25,000, and the clues are within the pages of the book.
Very innovative. I like that.
Well, I worked on the premise that I felt the reading public was just, you know, we're kind of caught up in a multicultural world of different media forms, and I felt like this was kind of a form of interactive entertainment, that you could read it again as a mystery, or you could go out and you could go on a treasure hunt. So it's designed to get people who enjoy something that's a little different when they pick up a book.
Now, when did the book actually come out?
It not too long ago, just probably a month ago. It hit the shelves, and it's kind of working its way through the distribution process. I have a small press that has printed it, and it seems to be catching on. We've created where the people can go to this website. We call it www.questmystery.com, and you can register if you want to go in search of the dagger, and you become a quester, and we've started having a good following of people that are creating a forum and communities between each other and starting to talk about the book, and that's what we like to see.
Absolutely. So even though it's only been a month or so, you're getting some positive feedback on the book and about the dagger.
Yes, I've been very surprised at the feedback, but I think it's twofold. One, we have to realize that the kind of tongue-in-cheek play on the mayor of Las Vegas makes it a fun local book. And then the other, the treasure hunt for the dagger, makes it kind of a more comprehensive sort of event book. And we've gotten a lot of good publicity, a lot of good interest, and we've only really concentrated on the national, or rather on the local market, kind of as our first phase to kind of get it established in Las Vegas before it goes on more of a national circuit.
What gave you the idea for the book? Is that something you thought about for a long time or just recently?
Well, the treasure hunt has been evolving for a long time. Again, I was involved in the gaming industry, and we're always looking, the company I work for invents casino games, so we're all kind of looking at different approaches for attracting people to come in and play a game or be involved. And when I was living in, actually, Denver, Colorado, and working in the small casinos in the Colorado Mountains, I kind of started formulating what would draw people to a small town, or marketing-wise, what would keep people to come back, and the mystery and the hidden clues and the hidden treasure was one of the aspects of it. So it's begun for a while, and then again, having a very interesting, colorful character as our beloved Las Vegas mayor, makes it fun to do tongue-in-cheek stuff with him.
Oh, sure, yeah. And that, what a great promoter for Vegas he is, isn't he? certainly gets some attention.
Well, I even had an editor when I was writing or going through the book prior to publication who was saying, well, we don't know if the character here doesn't seem very believable. Seems a little bit too outlandish. And I was going to say, I've toned this down. I've actually taken out a lot of characteristic traits of this to make the guy at least seem human.
So. Steve, how long did it take you to do the manuscript from when you first sat down to the keyboard until you were ready to submit?
Well, again, I would say it's an evolving process. I actually wrote an earlier manuscript that was based in Colorado in the mining community. That was kind of, I guess, my practice manuscript. And I did that about 4 or 5 years ago. And then I kind of followed the adage, you're supposed to write what you know. And again, this quintessential Renaissance man, as I've been in so many different careers, I seem to know too much, maybe. But I ended up really focusing on the fact of Las Vegas, and I live in an old neighborhood of Las Vegas, and the mayor lives close by, so I had that sort of acquaintanceship. And I ended up developing the concept of what I call is really a tourist mystery, in the fact that of tourists picking this book up at a bookshop, whether across the country or in an airport bookshop, would pick it up and say, ah, this is my what I expect out of Las Vegas. This has all the characters that one would come to love and know. And we have Las Vegas is a drawing element for writers, because you can go to the outlandish, you can go to the extreme, or even to the violence, and it kind of is expected that Vegas has those sort of traits, and that's why you see so many writers use Vegas as a background.
Yeah, it certainly is. Vegas, you can do about anything you want there and have it be realistic, actually.
Yes, I think so. And the fact that we have various television show, Casino was a good example of it, and then CSI, of course, Las Vegas, drew attention to the fact that if you look at those plots, they could stretch it to the limits of imagination, and still people say, oh, well, that's Las Vegas.
Yeah, right. Now, when you finished the manuscript, you had to face the next thing that all writers have to face, is trying to get your work published.
Yes.
And for the benefit of aspiring authors who may listen to the program or be listening to the program, could you tell us what steps you went through to get your book in print?
Well, basically, the main thing I had to do was rewrites. We were talking how long it took me. Since I have the famous day job, I was writing this book in the evening times. And so when I got to the rough manuscripts, I started bringing editors in. And then, in fact, I had written so much, I had to chop a lot and get another editor and kind of clean it up. I was very lucky in one instance that I had Ann Hillerman, who is author Tony Hillerman's daughter. She went through the manuscript and did a walkthrough of it. And then locally, Jamie Carpenter helped me with doing some editing also. So I had a lot of supportive editors on the book, which I was thankful for. Towards the publishing, I went through the normal thing of trying to find the agents or the publishers. By chance, I was able to stumble into the publisher without the agent. This brings up another kind of a whole different direction. I had gone down to the Tony Hillerman Writers Conference and spent actually 2 years down there. And my last time down there, I ran into a publisher who, you know, I pitched the book and told him about the treasure hunt and the questmystery.com and how everything was hidden within the book, or you could find clues that lead you on a treasure hunt. And he was interested, and he was coming through Las Vegas, so he stopped by the house, and we talked for a while. And at the same time, an interesting story is that he looked around the house and saw my first edition mysteries that I was reading so I could learn more about the mystery writing. And then he ran across my wife's collection, which was a cookbook collection, and he basically ended up leaving the house with giving her a contract to write a book on cookbooks. And he didn't. He basically nicely said that he couldn't do fiction books right now, but he would refer me to another publisher. So, in fact, well, we've ended up with publishers without agents, which is very rare, but we've been very lucky.
Right. And your wife unexpectedly got a contract herself.
Yes. So she is actually, her book is already finished and to the publisher for editing right now, and that'll be out next year sometime.
Did you run into, when you were seeking a publisher and so forth, did you run into any scams?
Not really. I think one of the things that I do is I double check on the websites to double check who I'm talking to. I certainly bought a lot of the how to get published, how to be an author, and how to find an agent. I bought all those books as the novice person. I think one of the things you have to do is if you get into the writing mode, you have to also start getting into the circles of fellow writers and conferences and start creating a social community that you're participating in, because I think everybody seems to be very friendly and everybody is trying to help each other with, 200,000 or 300,000 books published every year. You don't feel like you're competitive against the guy who's next to you. So there's always seems to be a support group that kind of helps out, and I've been very lucky to find people like that as I've started the process of marketing the book.
I was going to bring it up later, but we'll get into it now, is the importance of networking, first of all, being able, when you're starting, is getting information from people who have been there and done that through conferences or writers groups and so forth. And that goes all the way through from when you're just starting your manuscript through learning the ropes or how to look or how to find a publisher, how to not get scammed, because there are scammers out there, and through the marketing. So I have come to think of these social networks, as you say, to be almost critical to your chances for success, and I believe you probably agree with me on that.
Oh, definitely. I think one of the frustrations in a certain way is that these days anybody can get a book printed. If you've written about your grandmother or if you've written about your summer vacation, you can call yourself an author because we have all this print-on-demand technology. The issue out there is when the book is printed, you now have to market it, and I think that's where a lot of people fall short. And again, the social community, you have to go out there. You're the primary salesman, the publisher of whether it's a New York-based publishing house or just a small press. They are not going to be the ones that are out there pounding the pavements or marketing you. You have to show them your qualities and your ability to get noticed. And so you become your own publicist, your own marketing person, and the famous selling the books out of your trunk of your car is a very reasonable and expected thing to do these days.
Yeah, and you obviously did research into the writing business, and you went to conferences and became involved with other authors and so on. It surprises me today, actually, with the number of resources available on the Internet, the authors who don't research the writing business. And I made that mistake. And I should have done a lot more research on the business of writing than I did. However, that continues today. I mean, I'm talking going back to 1994. And virtually today, everybody has a computer, or any writer has a computer with Internet access and so on. And with the amount of information that's available, whether it's helping to help you with your writing, whether it's a check on scams and research potential publishers or agents, or whatever it is, there's relatively easy to get the information. And I have trouble anymore understanding why people don't do that and end up getting caught unawares. It just doesn't make sense to me.
Well, writing is a business, and you can't just say, oh, I've created a work and it's successful, and here's my book. You have to look at it as a business. You have to realize there's marketing dollars. There's realize you have to go out and sell it, and there's a bottom line. Just having now paid my taxes, I realize that down the road I have to make sure that this book provides income because I don't want it classified as a hobby.
Right.
So it definitely has to become some sort of career. And that requires continuing to write, too. That's probably one of my failings is I do everything. And so now that I've finished this project, I have to get geared up to do another one. And meanwhile, I probably need to fight myself and get over the procrastination of learning how to write at least daily or every other day.
That takes discipline, doesn't it?
I mean, it does.
Really,
it does.
You have to be organized and stick to it.
Yes, exactly. And in fact, that's probably one of my main issues of what I've gone through in life, is that I have been through so many careers, and I have actually constantly been writing since high school and college, and past that, being involved in a lot of writing sort of projects, but I always got sidetracked in the business side and never really worked on the craft of writing, which over the last 3 or 4 years, that's what I've now changed and been working on, trying to get that improved.
Okay, we've got now the book is in print, and then we get into the dreaded, and what I think is just as important as writing a good manuscript, is the marketing piece of this thing. Because like you said, you can, anybody today with the print-on-demand options out there can get a book, no matter really what it is, what genre, or the quality of it, they can actually get the book in print. But then comes getting it into the hands of the readers, and that's kind of the bottom line.
I think the main battle that I am seeing right now is trying to make sure your book stands above everyone else's, that you rise above the forest and stand out, and you get noticed by your distributors or whoever's distributing you. The bookstore, especially the large chains, are so caught up in their bureaucracy that the individuality of the author is lost out, and, you know, fighting for shelf space, fighting for recognition, it becomes really kind of a grunge that is hard for just the small-time writer to work their way up, to become a noticed person. And even if you make it in the New York publishing circles, sometimes you have to keep in mind your agent has several books they're pushing, your publisher has hundreds more they're pushing, so you get lost to the side. And I think you're going to see a lot more, you are seeing a lot more smaller presses appearing on the landscape because they can handle and get out there a lot better. But again, marketing-wise, it's up to the author, more or less, to create the buzz on his book.
Yeah, and an author does not understand that, they're going to be in, I think, for a very rude awakening when they actually get published and have that book out there. If you think you can sit back with your feet up on the coffee table waiting for the phone to ring with your publicist giving you your next schedule of signings or speaking engagements, you're probably going to be disappointed. You've got to get out there and hustle yourself.
And what I found my discovery in learning the process was the main bookstores or the main chains, for the most part, everybody really is getting your book free. They hold it free, and then they put it on the shelves, and if it doesn't sell in 30, 60 days, it comes back. There's not really that somebody's going to write you a huge check unless you've been lucky enough to get a large advance at the very beginning, and then that publisher is kind of concerned whether or not he'll ever see their money back. So it's a very cruel world out there for the author, and I think they have to probably call it guerrilla marketing. You have to find ways. And luckily, I've seen these, again, at conferences. I've seen a lot of writers who have done maybe the self-help books are probably the best example, and they're out giving speeches and selling 10 to 15 books after every speech, and they keep moving around, and that's how they get noticed, and they don't have to make the New York Times list, and they create a little genre business for themselves.
Yeah, and it's we're going to talk a little more about marketing. In fact, before we move on, though, you mentioned the Quest website. Is there any other website or email information you'd like to give out if people want any more information about you or your book?
Well, I think if they go to questmystery.com, which is my main website, they're able to kind of find, you know, not only the biography, excerpts from the book, kind of the subject of the book, but there's a forum there for people who are interested in the going on the quest for the hidden dagger. There's some my past writings are there. There is also the calendar for future events, which I post. So it's designed to be a community and active website, which hopefully will be active as we start into the sequel of the Vegas Dive Book.
So the Quest Mystery site would be the site where they can actually find pretty much anything they want to know.
Yes, and if they want to contact me or ask questions of the author, I'll be more than happy to respond. I believe very much on hands-on, and if you buy the book, you're a friend, and let's talk about it.
Okay. Back to marketing. Now, certainly the dagger is obviously a very impressive a tool. Is there anything else in addition to that that you've tried that you've had success with, or maybe a lack of success with, or any other marketing efforts you have going on?
Well, I think I've been very lucky, again, fortunate to have the support of the booksellers of Southern Nevada, the independent bookstores, which are also used bookstores. They've been very supportive of the book and willing to put the book in their bookstores, and that's been very helpful, and it's a good organization. And there have been a lot of articles written recently about the demise of the small bookstores, but we have bookstores that are coming online on top of them. Amber Unicorn is one that's on Decatur. That's now open. We have a new one, Cheesecake and Crime, that seems to be focused on mystery. That seems to be doing well. So the outlets are out there if you're an author in the Las Vegas area. And I think what you have to do is you have to build those friendships up, because those people are the ones that by word of mouth will talk nicely about you and your book.
Yeah, my experience was, well, when I had my first book published, I thought then, being naive, that the solution to marketing was if I could get my rear end in a chain bookstore for a signing, that kind of would launch me, and that would be it. And I learned first I had a self-published POD book, and I started getting educated very quickly about what the bookstores, especially the chain stores, thought about self-published POD authors. And when I finally did get a brick-and-mortar chain store signing, it was a consignment deal, and I had they had self-published authors. They had a whole group at once. You were in competition with several other authors. A very poor promotion by the bookstore. And over the years, now I still do bookstore signings, but very limited, because I found that I do better in events such as speaking events at libraries, cultural centers, that type of thing, coffee shops. What emphasis do you place on brick-and-mortar chain store signings in your overall plans for marketing?
You know, it's there, but I would agree with you that they focusing on you and doing the marketing is probably non-existent. There have been a lot of writers doing the books on publishing who said the signings were not necessarily that successful, and that's dependent that the bookstores, again, maybe you're not focusing you so directly to get people in. You have to have the side advantage. If you're writing a book on how to embroider, then giving things away or giving demonstrations or, as you say, speaking draws people to the store. But merely going to a national chain and says, oh, yeah, come in and sign, you'll find yourself sitting there very lonely. I look for trying to find areas or look for things, places that I feel like will have high traffic counts. One of the things that we all have to do as authors, where we've been shy and been writing alone for the last many months or years, is that we now are our own salesmen, so we have to overcome any shyness and make the ability. I did one signing recently at a very well-known bookstore, and they stuck me near an elevator, and all these people are going up and down, but very few people came over and said, what are you doing? And I think I would have done that differently. I would have probably passed out something that caught them off the elevator and then caught their attention. The other function I think that we have to look at is that we're in an internet world, and the internet is probably one of the great sales tools, and we have to figure out how to best market through that, and I think that's one of the structures that every author should consider.
Absolutely. I think in the internet, I'm not that experienced on it. I don't claim to be an expert, but I found there are a lot of opportunities for free promotion on there. I mean, there's all these different sites and author groups and different things. And you can actually get on the internet and do some marketing without having to have a huge advertising budget. And then there are things you can pay for, of course, also. But there is a certain amount of free promotion opportunity out there.
I think the thing that one has to look at is your time value management. You have to take a look at, if I spend my time here to sell two books, is it better that I do something else where I can sell more? And I think the concept of just selling has to be replaced with, a marketing strategy on how to get out there.
And speaking of marketing strategies, you know, I had a guest on last week, and we were talking about marketing. And the lady told me, she said, if you have two authors with basically the same book, the same manuscript, the same type of manuscript, both about the same word count and so on and so forth, when the publisher or agent, depending who you're pitching, is evaluating which manuscript to select, they will tend to go more, when you have equal content, they will go more toward who has the best marketing plan or marketing history if they've had other books. And because marketing is so important, and as you mentioned, the publisher is not going to do it, or at least not much of it, and they want that book to sell, obviously, they're going to look for the person who has the best ideas and is aware, even, that marketing is a very important part of the writing business.
I would agree. The other thing is still the focus on the idea of the book. It has to be an idea that has marketability. I did two things. I created The Treasure Hunt, and I'm going to continue it through other books in different fashions and using quest mystery as kind of a basis or the form to do that by. The other thing was, again, the plot itself, which drew in the Vegas, the mobsters, drew in the thing, the mayor as being one of the central characters. I also have the casino executive. I have the homicide detective. I have all these Sin City characters that are out there that are designed to kind of keep it spicy and a fun-filled sort of book. So you have to have a good story and tell a good story.
Right, and do you agree that once people like your book, once people read you and they enjoy the read and they gain respect for you as an author, that obviously is going to help any follow-ups, whether it be a sequel to that book or an entirely different book. Once you develop that fan base and a loyal fan following, I mean, it's certainly a valuable asset to have behind you.
We all welcome creating fans, and that's one of our quiet goals to do it. And certainly, yes, I would be privileged if after people read the book, they said, when are you coming out with your next book? And I think that puts pressure on me to kind of keep down at the writing table and keep creating. But we want to have the fans and establish a good rapport.
Absolutely, and it's and most authors, once they get their feet wet, I hesitate, since we both write crime, to use the word kill, but a lot of us would kill to have a loyal fan base. I mean, it's certainly...
Well, again, the mystery genre is very well crowded today, to say the least. And again, one has to figure out a way to stand out and work your way up until you become... I think you do have to have a gimmick, whether it's forensics or whether it's... hidden, buried treasure, or whatever. You have to stand above everybody else, and you just can't do a simple, cozy mystery these days.
Now, you say you have another book in the works?
Well, actually, I have another manuscript, which is kind of fun. I have a one that I've actually done that I'm working out and going to pound on publishers' and agents' doors, and that's a mystery kind of taking off on my wife's cookbook collection. It's a culinary mystery, but it's set in Hawaii, where I've been going every year, and it's basically tied into a Food Network channel running across murder and solving crimes. And
wow.
I think that's a fun one that falls under the Janet Ivanovich sort of writing. And then I have the sequel is going to be the homicide detective in my who's a lady homicide detective in my current Vegas Dive book. She's coming back to solve the case of the headless conventioneers.
Okay. That sounds like it'll be a fun read, too.
Yes, I hope so. I hope everybody would enjoy it.
Well, Steve, our time's up already. Radio. I really, really appreciate you being on with me today. And
Denny, thank you very much. Look forward to seeing you soon.
Thanks a lot, Steve. Bye-bye.
Okay. Bye.
And again, thanks to Steve Grogan for being with me today and sharing his experiences about his book, Vegas Tie. And we spent quite a bit of time talking about marketing. And for anyone interested in further information about that, I'm doing a special show on Friday, the 18th of April at 11 a.m. Pacific, a one-hour special about virtual book tours. And if you're an author thinking about promoting your book, you should probably try to tune into that, and you'll get a lot of information and be able to call into a professional virtual book tour operator and get some answers to what a book tour, a virtual book tour does and how they're set up and what they accomplish. So hopefully you can join us for that. In the meantime, have a good day, and we'll catch you later. Bye-bye.